Now then, let me proceed to the first of the formal presentations, which is the presentation about outer space as international space. And here we have Professor Armel Kerest, who is a professor in several French universities. He's a teacher of law of international spaces at the universities of Brittany and Paris South. But he also is someone who's very familiar with the world of policy and practice as well. He's spent 13 years as a representative of France in the UN Committee for Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. So without further lengthy introduction, let me invite Professor Kerest to take the podium and make his presentation.
So thank you. I'm very pleased to be here because this issue, this is a point of international spaces. I think it is quite important and quite interesting because it is a terrible challenge to try to rule some places without having the support of territorial jurisdiction. I will follow the indication of the chair, and I will try to at least to go to the first. I will go to the first point, and I will skip on the remarks I proposed to do on international spaces, to go straight on to the relations between Antarctica and outer space. In fact, by many points, Antarctica and outer space have a lot in common. It means, for instance, it is a very dangerous place. And for lawyers, the nature of a place to be dangerous or not is quite relevant. To my opinion and to what I learned listening these 2 days, I think that the legal status of Antarctica is quite interesting because, I knew it already, it is quite interesting because it is based on a very difficult situation. So I called it legal nightmare because, in fact, it is quite difficult to have a system where you have states which claim a territory and others which are not claiming but could claim and refuse a claim. And then you have a third category of states which are non-claiming, refusing the claims, and not considering claiming. So it is for a lawyer, when you consider that the territorial jurisdiction and sovereignty is a core of the system, then of course it looks very much like a nightmare. And of course it is still, in fact, as I heard yesterday and the day before, Article 4 is always to be in fact taken into consideration. But then, given this situation, which is rather complex and difficult, the Antarctic Treaty System succeeded into making an interesting mechanism of governance and maybe consider as an example to govern. The hypothesis of my presentation is that for outer space we are the other way around. That's to say, we have got a legal system which is not too bad and which may works rather well. The principles are rather fixed; they are accepted. And on the other way, we don't have any efficient governance. So I think we could start from this proposal to see how we can manage to try to use the Antarctic Treaty System in order to find a solution to improve the mechanism of outer space. I will make a few remarks quickly. A few remarks about the mechanism of the legal framework of outer space. First of all, like for Antarctica, we are the space law. In fact, is a child of Cold War, and because of Cold War, we have this rules of space law. Just the first one, which is responsibility of states for activities in outer space. We have to consider that at first, USSR refused any private activity in outer space. And in the draft proposal, when they proposed this, the text which became the declaration, 1963 declaration, they refused any private activity in outer space. And then the compromise was that there may be some private activity in outer space, but those activities are always under the control of space of states, and they are assimilated within the notion of national activities in outer space. And then among those activities, there is public and private activities, and if they are private, they must be authorized and supervised by the states. Then we have got also an interesting point, which is the Liability Convention. The Liability Convention set an interesting absolute liability for damage, which is in a way the counterpart of the freedom of use, so that the freedom of use may be accepted, then the liability is absolute and protect very much the victim on the Earth. It doesn't protect so well the victim in orbit, but the victim down on the Earth is quite efficiently protected. We have, if we compare to, I wouldn't compare to Antarctica and Annex 6, of the protocol, but I will compare because I don't want to do that before Judge Wolfram. But I would compare with the Brussels Convention on oil pollution, and of course I would be pleased to see that this liability is without any selling and neither in amount or in time, and so it is rather efficient, even if we don't have any case for the time being out, if we consider, we exclude the case between Canada and Russia. So I see that I am a little bit too long on that point, so I will skip quickly. We have got this possibility to have another procedure, which is also quite useful, the mechanism of the Claims Commission, which may enable the settlement of dispute. And then we have, as it is in mainly the case, we have the problem of damage to international environment. We have to consider that the text was for the 70s, and at the time the problem of damage to environment was not really settled or considered. Then I go to the principle of non-appropriation. Of course, it is a main difference between with the Antarctic Treaty, because we don't have any claimant states. We have some claimant people, but they are more it's more kind of folklore than really something serious. We have got this Article 2 of the Outer Space Treaty, which is quite clear. Outer space, including the Moon and other celestial bodies, is not subject to national appropriation, and so on, by any other means, which is clear and which puts that clearly that there is no possibility of any appropriation. Then I'm sorry to come to this point, which is not so efficient in the mechanism, which is military activities. For military activities, we have, of course, the general principle of peaceful use, which is in the United Nations Charter and which is also in the Outer Space Treaty and as a customary rule, which cannot be interpreted another way than non-aggressive use. And we then have to consider that there is two places. The first one is orbits around the Earth, and the second one is the Moon and the orbit around the Moon and other celestial bodies. For the first, which is of course the most dangerous and the most useful for military activities, which is orbits around the Earth, then we have the only rule is of course this peaceful use, but also the prohibition of weapons of mass destruction. It is I regret to say that it is the only rule which applies to orbits around the Earth. If we consider now the Moon and all the other celestial bodies, it's very much the same rule as it is in Antarctica. There is a few very light differences, but it is also exclusively peaceful use. It means non-military activity. Then, as far as protection of space environment is concerned, the text is rather old. The text of the treaty 67 is rather old, and there is some references about harmful contamination of outer space and also changes of the environment of the Earth, but they are not going very far. So then I come to my second part, and my second part deals with what can we get from the Antarctic Treaty. As what lessons can we have from the Antarctic Treaty? I will stress three points, special points, which is regulation of activities, military activities, and the moon. So on the first point, we have currently many difficulties about ruling activities in outer space. For the time being, states used to regulate themselves the activities without taking a lot of consideration of the activities of others. Fortunately, the outer space is wide, large, and they could do it rather easily. But you have seen that there is more and more accident. Sometimes it's not accident, but it is destruction of satellites, voluntary destruction of satellites, like some satellite which has been destroyed. I won't enter into detail. But we have also accident, and you remember the accident, a rather recent accident between the Iridium satellite and the Cosmos. And then we have a real problem, which is maybe considered, it's a question of space traffic management. We have to do something in order to regulate the traffic. It is already done, rather successfully for geostationary orbit, where International Telecommunication Union deals with the positions. But for the lower orbit, then it is not really regulated, and we need really some kind of cooperation, and then I'm sure that we could find examples in the Antarctic Treaty system in order to find some possibility to have this cooperation. Connected with this point is a question of mitigation of space debris. We have discussed this point for years and years, or at least we have proposed a discussion for years and years within the United Nations Committee for Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, but due of the reluctance of some states, we are really on the very beginning for this issue. We have got a code of conduct which has been accepted by the scientific and technical subcommittee without going to the legal subcommittee in order to be sure that no legal compulsory element should pollute this code of conduct. And then, of course, it's not very satisfactory because the text is absolutely not compulsory and is very far from being so. Of course, I am dreaming, looking at what happens in the protocol for Antarctica, the protocol for protection of the environment, and of course I am looking with envy to this environmental impact assessments, which are of course extremely useful and which may be used or should be used for outer space. In that direction, I think that it would be very useful to have to increase the role of scientists and experts, which is not currently the case. We in the corpus, even in the scientific and technical subcommittee, it is very much oriented by states, and the delegation are most composed by the space agencies or by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but not the experts and are not really represented. Well, then I come to military activities, and it's the big problem. You know certainly that we have got military activities in outer space. I would say that at the beginning, at least, it was perhaps the most important activity with strategic, I would call it strategic research. But military activity is not forbidden in outer space, as I told you, around the Earth. But it is now we know an evolution. as far as this military activity is concerned, we are now turning into something different, which is weaponization of outer space. And I think that there is a real dangerous evolution, a trend, that should be stopped as soon as possible, which is this arm race which is going on in outer space. Outer space is looked, for the time being, is looked by many as the new battlefield, and I am afraid it will evolve a very bad way if we go on that way. To my opinion, it should be stopped. It should be stopped perhaps a little bit for the same reasons that it has been stopped for Antarctica. It should be stopped because it is stupid. You know, if you put a satellite, there is nothing so fragile as a satellite. Yesterday we have seen those satellites and we have seen that they are extremely fragile. Anybody is capable, with a very little rocket, you can destroy your satellite, especially because you know exactly where it will be in 10 days from now. So it is quite easy to destroy your satellite. You need some capacity, but they are rather low. So to my opinion, satellites are military activities, are very useful for low-level conflicts. But they are absolutely unuseful for high-level conflict. If you have two states capable, having the outer space capacity, then it is absolutely, in 10 days, it will be finished. And they used to speak about Pearl Harbor, special Pearl Harbor, but it will be a special Pearl Harbor very quickly. Because it is the first thing to do, to destroy the satellites. And so, to my opinion, it is unuseful to go on with these arm race in outer space because it will, in fact, be more dangerous. And, of course, if we consider the debris issue, if you have a few satellites destroyed in very useful orbits, I mean, for the time, especially in the low Earth or Earth orbit, it will be absolutely terrible. And for years and years, outer space will not be usable anymore. So we need, of course, an agreement, because in those matters it's difficult to have a code of conduct, because you need something a little bit stronger, and also a strong control mechanism. And then I turn to outer space and to Antarctica, and of course it may be very useful to have a look to what may be done following the example of Antarctica. As far as the Moon is concerned, the Moon and other celestial bodies. You know that there is now currently some activities toward the Moon and Mars. And then it may be quite useful also to have a look to what has been done in Antarctica. As you know, outer space and the Moon and celestial bodies are res communis. If they are res communis, it means that they may be used by every state. But if you want to use the goods, the resources of a place which is common, then you need to enter into the process to accept the notion of common heritage of mankind, which is, to my opinion, the only way to be able to have a resource which is common and which may be used by the states. I'm sorry, I have to skip and that, but then, of course, we have a great interest having a look to the Kramara Convention, which was, of course, I'm not complaining about the Madrid Protocol, against the Madrid Protocol, especially as a French, it would be really bad to do it, but nevertheless, I am quite sure that this Kramara Convention was extremely useful, and we could have a look and copy it or take many ideas from this convention in order to make something. If it is decided to mine the Moon, it may be quite useful. And then I come to my conclusions, and my conclusions is related to the fact that we need now to to pass, to go to another speed of cooperation. We need a cooperation because we need to govern the planet. And in fact, what the astronauts saw when they went in outer space, they saw the planet as a very little planet and very fragile. And so they understood the necessity to really do something together. And the Antarctic Treaty system so shows that even given the difficult legal situation, goodwill, interventional scientists and independent experts, and real pragmatism, limiting national egoism. I work for the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and I know that the rule is often in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I suppose every of them. It is also to defend one's country. It's kind of logical practice, and I hope it may ease to find a solution. And I think that this solution is very needed for outer space. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, and let me award you the Antarctic Treaty Summit Medal.
Thank you very much.